In this next half-hour segment, we're going to be examining an article that appeared in High Times magazine. This is an article about an individual that I find fascinating and who obviously has some information that's useful, important, I should say, for us to understand. At the same time, this individual's case has been presented in the past in a context that I was frankly somewhat skeptical of. There is a publication called Media Bypass, which has tended to be bruited about by some of the Patriots and Militia Networks, an organization that I think is a mixed bag, and as I've indicated in past broadcasts, I think the political rhetoric on all sides vis-a-vis the Patriots and Militia movements and the Oklahoma City bombing, for example, has tended to be oversimplified. I think the Patriots and Militia movement is a mixed bag. I think many of the people within those movements are sincere, albeit usually misinformed conservatives. There are also a lot of outright Nazis and fascists in those organizations. I think, again, the rhetoric has been oversimplified on all sides with regard to that particular those institutions. Media Bypass, for example, has had some articles that looked to me to be fairly credible, and it's mixed in fairly liberally with the stuff about the Russian troops who are going to take over the U.S. for the U.N. and similar reworked John Birch Society fertilizer. However, there is a story about a former CIA operative named Charles Hayes, who by his own account, and that has not been corroborated, by his own account has been working with a group of veteran former intelligencers as something of a fifth column, attempting to root out some of the organized crime and narcotics connected corruption that afflicts the federal government. His story, that is to say Charles Hayes' story, has surfaced in the past, and I have not accessed it because of the context in which it appeared. A writer whose work I have a great deal of respect for, Dick Russell, the author of the consummately important book, The Man Who Knew Too Much, one of the best and certainly the most comprehensive book ever written about the assassination of President Kennedy, has accessed Charles Hayes' story in High Times magazine. And this article was provided to us by a listener, and research credit on this article goes to that listener. I'm going to present the first part of it. I'm going to begin a presentation of this particular story in this first half-hour segment. One of the elements of information that I want to provide by way of background, and something that is discussed in numerous archival broadcasts, in particular a miscellaneous archive program entitled We Have Ways of Making You Sell, and that is the Inslaw case. Inslaw was a small computer software company founded by a fellow named William Hamilton, and his Promise software, that's capital, it's all in capital letters, PROMIS, was basically obtained by the Department of Justice under Ronald Reagan, and was legally contracted to utilize that software. Then, according to Hamilton, and there is considerable grounds for supporting his analysis, that software was trafficked around to other U.S. government agencies, and an altered version of that software with a backdoor that would enable U.S. intelligence to access the files of foreign intelligence services, an altered version of the Promise software was trafficked around to foreign governments as well. Again, their altered version could be accessed by U.S. intelligence. Some of the evidentiary tributaries surrounding the Inslaw alleged ripoff run in the direction of the Iran-Contra scandal. The late journalist Danny Casolaro was investigating the Inslaw case, and among the people that Casolaro had interfaced with was the aforementioned Charles Hayes. The Inslaw case is one of a number of overlapping intelligence-related scandals that were under investigation as the administrations of Ronald Reagan and George Bush drew to a close. And the death of Danny Casolaro and the Inslaw case are both a focal point of miscellaneous archive shows about those respective subjects. Again, there's a miscellaneous archive show entitled We Have Ways of Making You Sell. Also, there's a miscellaneous archive show about the death of Danny Casolaro. Also, RFA 38 also has information about the Inslaw case and some of the evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the October surprise, the apparent deal cut between the Reagan and Bush administrations and the Khomeini forces in Iran. The Inslaw case, as I have said in the past about that and other cases, has more connections than a switchboard, and given the limited time span that we have here, I will not be able to do any more than just touch on it. But it should be noted that Hayes's name has cropped up in connection with the Inslaw investigation. And although there is no corroboration, no firm corroboration at this point for Hayes' allegations concerning the fifth column that Hayes claims to have been a part of. At the same time, there's nothing disproving it, and there is evidence that Charles Hayes is who he claims to be. In particular, I have a very high regard for the work of Dick Russell, and if Dick Russell found the parts of Hayes' story that he has accessed here to be credible, that's a pretty good recommendation to my way of thinking. Research credit on the following goes to a listener. This is entitled Spook Wars in Cyberspace. Is the FBI Railroading Charles Hayes? It's authored by Dick Russell, and it's from the High Times issue of June of 1997. The article begins with an introduction. Why does the international dope trade just keep flourishing, even while major traffickers and their government protectors keep getting exposed and imprisoned? Well, it could just possibly be that the ones going to jail aren't using the right computer software. Here's another murky peek into the legendary Promise conspiracy. And again, Promise, one word, capital P-R-O-M-I-S, all in capital letters. And the first part of the article is an introduction to the situation of Charles Hayes. It's entitled, Spook Wars in Cyberspace. Is the government railroading Charles Hayes? This is a story straight from a Tom Clancy novel, or maybe Mission Impossible. Shortly before last November's election, A Kentucky surplus computer dealer, who claims to be a longtime CIA contract agent, gets arrested by an FBI SWAT team and is charged with hiring an undercover agent to murder his own son. At his trial in January, 61-year-old Charles Hayes testifies that he's been set up by the federal government. And why? Because he's part of a team of retired intelligence types calling themselves the Fifth Column, who've been using a supercomputer to hack into certain secret foreign bank accounts used by numerous U.S. politicians to stash illegal funds garnered mainly from drug and arms dealers. I want to stress that, as Russell points out, there has been no corroboration of Hayes' claims concerning his role as part of this Fifth Column. On the other hand, a number of aspects of Hayes' background and story have checked out, so I do think that his situation is worthy of serious consideration. I also think, too, that people should understand that, as I've stated in past broadcasts, the national security establishment is by no means a monolith, and just as there are many and powerful elements that collaborate with drug dealers, criminals, fascist war criminals, and holdovers from the Hitler and Mussolini period, and indeed elements that have evolved from those very same connections, so too there are many fine, honorable men and women within the national security establishment for whom many of those activities would be utterly reprehensible. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why people in national security roles are dealt with on a need-to-know basis, because many of them would not have anything to do with some of the events that they have been involved in if they knew the entire scope of the operation. Continuing. The prosecution's key witness against Hayes at the trial in London, Kentucky, turns out to be a right-wing California journalist who occasionally informs for the FBI, a fugitive with a history of mental institutionalization. For the defense, a former senior editor at Forbes magazine vouches for Hayes' credibility. After the jury hears tapes of Hayes discussing a $5,000 payoff for a prospective hit on his estranged son, the defendant responds that he'd known all along he was talking to an FBI undercover, but had been stringing the Bureau along so he could develop evidence against them. When the CIA introduces affidavits disavowing any relationship with Hayes, he takes the stand to provide his cover name, Charles Lawson, unquote, and an ID number. Following 3 hours of deliberation, the jury finds Hayes guilty to the astonishment of nearly 100 supporters present. He says from his jail cell afterwards, while his attorney moves for a new trial, that he anticipates, quote, assistance, unquote, from higher powers. This next section of the article is entitled, Hayes Gets Around. Is Charles Hayes for real, or merely a con man looking for a get-out-of-jail-free card? For months prior to his arrest last year, revelations about Hayes and his postulated fifth column had been circulating on the Internet and in Media Bypass, a colorful, quote, patriot, unquote, publication out of Evansville, Indiana. Not only was this fifth column said to have downloaded financial records on government officials from up to 3,000 hidden overseas accounts, but they also allegedly wire transferred about $4 billion clear out of those accounts into escrow holding funds, unquote, at Federal Reserve banks. Then, according to Hayes, these alleged Robin Hoods of cyberspace began quietly announcing their findings to certain congresspeople and foreign governments, which is why, so the yet undocumented saga brags, a record number of 60-some U.S. senators and representatives announced their retirements just before the 1996 elections. Again, note that there has been no corroboration of Hayes' allegations, but as we shall see, some of his background does check out. Continuing. And that also, the alleged activities of this alleged fifth column, and that also was supposedly how the Mexican federales got turned on to the drug-laundered millions salted away in Switzerland by the family of ex-president Carlos Salinas de Gortari. On the face of it, these assertions might appear prosperous, but a High Times investigation into Hayes' background reveals a tantalizing trail of evidence indicating, at the least, considerable insider knowledge about computers and smuggling. In 1985, Charles Hayes was a key government witness in a Kentucky trial involving the largest gemstone seizure ever by U.S. Customs, millions of dollars worth that had been smuggled out of Brazil. In 1991, the telephone records of doomed journalist Danny Casolaro showed numerous phone calls to Hayes in the months before Casolaro was found dead in a West Virginia hotel room. Casolaro had spent the past several years investigating a tangled web of government corruption called the Octopus, unquote. One of Casolaro's focuses was the Inslaw case, in which the Justice Department stands accused of having stolen the company's Promise computer software, which was capable of tracking complicated financial transactions. In 1992, Hayes testified about the Inslaw matter before a Chicago grand jury. In April of 1996, he was subpoenaed and gave a lengthy deposition about Inslaw to a Justice Department attorney who quizzed him about his computer expertise. FBI Special Agent David Keller, capital K-E-L-L-E-R, testified at Hayes' January trial that he knew of him from a previous FBI investigation into the Inslaw matter. In July of 1995, Representative Jim Leach, chairman of the House Banking Committee, wrote to the director of the National Security Agency seeking, quote, your agency's help in verifying or laying to rest various allegations of money laundering in Arkansas in the late 1980s, unquote. Among other matters, Representative Leach asked about Inslaw's Promise software and Charlie Hayes. Several of Hayes' associates back up his contention that he's being framed in an attempt to put the fifth column out of business. One well-placed source who requested anonymity affirms that Hayes was a CIA asset, adding, quote, I think Hayes has been set up to the nth degree to discredit him, unquote. By the way, that would not be the first time something like that has happened. And again, I want to stress that Hayes' allegations concerning the fifth column have not been substantiated, but his background has. Continuing. This next section is entitled Mina and the Octopus, and it deals with some of the Contra-related drug smuggling going out of Mina, Arkansas. Hayes launched the five-member fifth column himself, he maintains to High Times, primarily to follow the money laundering of the international drug cartels. It's a personal crusade, according to one of his associates in Kentucky, triggered by the way Hayes' 37-year-old son, John, the alleged murder-for-hire target, supposedly, quote, cooked his mind on drugs, unquote. Mark Swaney, capital S-W-A-N-E-Y, whose Arkansas committee was responsible for much of the early publicity surrounding the notorious CIA drugs and arms operation out of Mina, Arkansas, High Witness News, January of 95, spoke with Hayes on a number of occasions between 1992 and 1995. Quote, a lot of what he told me about Mina turned out to be true, unquote, says Swaney. Swaney's notes from a July 1992 interview with Hayes contain charges that both the federal government and the Arkansas State Police were involved in distributing cocaine out of Mina. Asked if then-Governor Bill Clinton was aware of the Mina operation, Hayes responded, quote, no, but his associates were involved, unquote. He elaborated that some of the money was laundered through two powerful Arkansas companies with ties to Clinton. In a five-hour jailhouse interview not long before his trial, Hayes, a former Air Force pilot, described a CIA assignment he'd once undertaken to fly a weapons shipment from Mina to Aruba in the Caribbean. On discovering that the cargo was actually cocaine, Hayes told me, he dumped it on the runway and ended up in a shootout that killed several people. This is one of many stones, such as Hayes' claimed friendships with Fidel Castro and Senator Edward Kennedy, that prove impossible to verify. But William Hamilton of St. Louis, the president of INSLAW, tells of encounters with Hayes which add credence to the existence of the fifth column. Hamilton first became aware of Hayes in 1990 in the midst of INSLAW's legal battle to prove that the Justice Department, FBI, CIA, NSA, and other federal agencies had illegally appropriated their promised database management software for their own purposes. As recounted in a heavily redacted House Judiciary Committee report, the INSLAW affair, September 1992, quote, Mr. Hayes is a surplus computer dealer with alleged ties to both the United States and foreign intelligence communities. Mr. Hayes first came to the attention of the committee during August of 1990, following assertions that excess Harris Lanier word processing equipment he had purchased from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Kentucky, located in Lexington, contained the promised software, unquote. The Justice Department had subsequently seized the equipment back from Hayes, preventing its use as evidence in the INSLAW case. The computer gear had also allegedly contained sensitive classified material, such as the identities of narcotics informants. Hamilton therefore contacted Hayes, who told him the military owed INSLAW plenty of money because it had secretly distributed his promised software. When Hamilton subsequently learned from a CIA contact that promise had indeed been used aboard U.S. submarines, he visited Hayes in Kentucky in January of 1991. Promise was, quote, in the CIA, DEA, FBI, everywhere, unquote, Hayes told him. Checking him out with other sources, Hamilton was told that Hayes and a partner, both codenamed Running Fox, unquote, had belonged to an elite intelligence unit which, quote, had to be able to take apart and put back together without any diagrams the Cray supercomputer, unquote. According to Hayes, this elite spy unit was known as Squad D. First mentioned in Bob Woodward's book Veil, The Secret Wars of the CIA, 1981 to 1987, Squad D was established by William Casey, Ronald Reagan's CIA director. Part of its mission was computer hacking, quote, there was penetration of the international banking system, unquote, Woodward wrote, again quoting, allowing a steady flow of data from the real, secret sets of books kept by many foreign banks that showed some hidden investing by the Soviet Union, unquote. And not just by the USSR. PROMISE, short for Prosecutor's Management Information System, had originally been designed to track complicated illegal currency transactions through intricate systems of laundering and wire transfers. It could easily be enhanced, unquote, to track transactions by banks and dummy corporations used by terrorists and dope dealers. Hamilton's INSLAW had sold promise to the early Reagan Justice Department, which promptly reneged on a $6 million payment due, asserting that a portion of the contract was not fulfilled. INSLAW went bankrupt, and its ongoing suit against the feds is still in the U.S. Court of Claims. And the next section of the article is entitled, Promise Them Anything. INSLAW's attorneys, who include former Attorney General Elliot Richardson, present evidence that a covert intelligence operation in fact transformed Promise into an unprecedented high-tech spying tool. It seems a brilliant young CIA contract agent out of Seattle named Michael Reconosciuto, reputedly a past master at clandestine drug chemistry and computer hacking, not only, quote, enhanced, unquote, the Promise package to implement its use in tracking international currency transfers, but fitted it with a secret, quote, trapdoor, unquote, access port that enabled U.S. espionage agencies to electronically monitor its use by anyone who bought it. According to Richardson, Promise was peddled to as many as 88 foreign governments by, quote, cutout, unquote, front men working for the Department of Justice, the NSA, and CIA. It was also purchased by numerous international banks in Switzerland and elsewhere, which were interested in standardizing their wire transfer data. None of these buyers knew about Reconosciuto's trapdoor application that not only allowed Uncle Sam to monitor their money laundering in progress, but, whenever desired, to invisibly modify it. One of the cutout peddlers of this stolen, hyped-up, and poisoned money-tracking software took it to Brazil in the mid-1980s, according to Charles Hayes, who was there at the time as a CIA contract agent in the matter of the stolen gemstones. Dr. Earl Bryan, convicted last year in Los Angeles of multi-million-dollar international financial fraud, had been California Secretary of Health during Reagan's governorship in the 1970s. Michael Reconosciuto has alleged that sometime after 1979, Brian was given the promised software to peddle around the world to line his personal pockets. It was during a sales trip to Brazil in 1985 that Dr. Brian allegedly told Hayes about Promise. Shortly after this Brazil adventure, Hayes moved back to his hometown of Nancy, Kentucky, and as his CIA cover, set up a salvage company specializing in computer parts and also began working with Reconosciuto. The Fifth Column's Cray Model 3B supercomputer was primarily constructed, it is said, through purchases at Department of Defense auctions. Initially, Hayes' Fifth Column's work has been done under government sponsorship. Veteran investigative journalist James Norman has written that besides penetrating the international banking system, the column had initially succeeded in downloading information from over 50 intelligence services around the globe, including the Soviet KGB and the Israeli Mossad. Then, Reconosciuto got busted for running a methamphetamine lab in 1992 and wound up in the federal penitentiary where he currently resides. Around the same time, Hayes' team discovered that the codes in the Promise software featured not just one, but two trapdoor ports, suggesting that Reconosciuto had planned to use one of these himself, possibly to raid accounts in banks using Promise. Hayes says the column shut down Reconosciuto's port and created their own multiple setup by which, through a modem, they could dial into a computer's security systems and circumvent them with a few keystrokes. Then Hayes further customized the software to sort through vast amounts of data using a Cray. The column could handle astounding data rates, which could be quickly downloaded and analyzed offline in search of money flows and other connections. In the virtual reality realm, money, unquote, is merely stored information. With the proper authorization codes, computers can electronically launch volumes of digitized currency from one bank account to another. Charging that the CIA, quote, didn't hold up their end, unquote, of some unspecified bargain, Hayes says that he and the other four Fifth Columnists decided to go rogue. Having sole access to their own software modifications, they were now essentially creating their own private currency tracking enterprise. And the next section of the article is entitled Plundering the Pirates. Secret, quote, numbered, unquote, accounts in Swiss banks, according to Hayes, are not actually numbered but lettered, with codes which appear on the lower right-hand side of their documents using tracking software and a sufficiently powerful computer, they are not difficult to penetrate. Hayes says the column uncovered a $1.5 million bribe paid by the Cali cartel to a witness against former Panama dictator Manuel Noriega, who was subsequently convicted in Florida of narcotics crimes the cartel may actually have committed. Then, after the column in 1994 examined the secret accounts of the Salinas family in Europe, he says they passed the incriminating data to the DEA, which promptly alerted the Mexican government. On an official basis, unquote, says former Wharton School finance professor and money laundering expert Orlin Grabe, or Grabby, G-R-A-B-B-E, a friend of Hayes, again quoting, people associated with the Fifth Column had tried to take their evidence to the appropriate legislative committees and the Justice Department and ran into a sea of corruption. So they decided to show them, quote, we'll do our job anyway, even if it's in a different form, unquote. Others are more skeptical. One well-placed High Times source who requested anonymity says he believes Hayes and his associates may indeed have accessed foreign accounts, but may also have kept considerable sums for themselves rather than just transferring money to Federal Reserve accounts. The Fifth Column first surfaced publicly in 1995 after James Norman, then a senior editor at Forbes, was alerted by Inslaw's Bill Hamilton to Hayes. Having broken a cover story on Iraqi arms money laundering through oil markets, Norman was tipped by Hamilton to the Promise case. Quote, Hamilton said that, as crazy as the things Hayes said seemed to be, they invariably had a way of proving true 6 months later, unquote, Norman recalls. So Norman, who describes himself as a liberal Democrat, visited Hayes at the Beckett Hotel in Nancy, where they spent an evening comparing notes. Hayes was interested in connections Norman had already discovered involving Promise Software, the NSA, and a Little Rock bank data processing company called Systematics, since absorbed by Alltel Information Services. Controlled by Arkansas billionaire Jackson Stevens, Systematics, according to Norman's sources, shuffled money for covert CIA and NSA spying operations and was also involved in a massive bank spying effort called Follow the Money, unquote. And we're going to continue with this article in our next half-hour segment. All of these half-hour segments, the various interviews that I've done, add the archive shows and most of the lecture tapes, as well as the weekly One Step Beyond shows, are available from a tape duplication service. The name of that service is Spitfire. That's one word, capital S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. You can reach them by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. There's also an email address for Spitfire. It's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, that's one word, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. Once again, that's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E at ix.netcom.com. You can also see a list of and description of all of the various programs available from Spitfire by dialing up the KFJC webpage. Point your web browser at www.kfjc.org. Once again, that's www.kfjc.org, and look in the Public Affairs section. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.